good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cuff, Hitney Cutter gave me.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot, and my other name is Wakunjahade, which means distant thunder. We talk about Native issues all over Turtle Island here, and as you know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. 651-304-9986. They're open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Again, that number is 651-304-9986.
Well, we got Robert Lilligren on today from NADCI and to give us some updates and local and national updates. And Lewis has a guest on the fourth segment today. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that person real quick?
Yeah, how Mataki Uppy. Good to see everyone out there. Well, speak to everyone, I guess, is what we do on the radio, right, Robert? Jennifer Langrick, she's a citizen of the Rosebud Sioux Nation. She also teaches at Dakota Prep, which is part of the American Indian OIC in the Indigenous or Native American Corridor in Minneapolis.
Wow, that's great. So, hey, why don't we do news here, and I know when Ogama isn't doing it, which she's doing it 99% of the time, Lewis steps in and does the news of what we're doing all over Turtle Island, and you won't hear anything close to this anywhere on any other station. So without any further waste of space and talk and time, let's go to Ogama with the news. Welcome, Ogama.
Hi, Ani Bujou, everybody. I'm Ogama Ganuakwe. I am a member of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota, and I bring you some national and regional Native news on Native Roots Radio every day. This week, I wanted to, again, touch base on the Line 3 project here in Minnesota, as well as the Line 5 project moving over in Wisconsin. So Minnesota environmental leaders are pressing Minnesota Governor Walz and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan to pull Line 3 permits due to Enbridge's construction problems and reporting failures. And scientists have provided an extensive list of Line 3's construction and oversight problems. The Science for the People Twin Cities developed a list of Line 3's environmental damage and shortcomings in hopes of generating more accountability. In the report, they sent it to the Minnesota State Senator John Marty. The report says that there's failures by the state and federal agencies to abide by treaty law, failures by state agencies to engage in meaningful tribal consultation, inspection, and reporting failures by Enbridge, and false statements and made by state agencies and more. I mean, it's a huge statement. I can't even begin to cover all of it. But it's pretty scathing. The other fantastic thing that Science for the People Twin Cities did was they helped to collect and analyze water samples at the sites of the Line 3 frackouts. Volunteer pipeline monitors began collecting water samples out of concern that the state wasn't sampling. And frackouts had occurred during horizontal directional drilling at more than one site where there was, I believe, 21 waters and wetlands that were damaged by Enbridge using horizontal directional drilling. The process requires drilling mud to lubricate and cool the drill, and all of this happens under pressure, so drilling mud can essentially get forced through to the surface. It's called a frack out. What they found was that there was drilling mud which had suspended sediment, which is damaging to aquatic life in the rivers. The drilling mud also contained about 400, drilling mud collected at one site contained about 401 milligrams of sulfates. Sulfate in water is highly damaging to wild rice, and water samples downstream from the same drilling fluid spill had sulfate concentrations above the state standard for wild rice. And they found phosphorus, oil and grease, organic carbon, calcium and barium, and more in the samples collected downstream from the frackouts versus upstream. So drilling fluid is now at the subsurface at all spill sites, and recent photos and videos indicate that it's kind of getting worse. So that's definitely something that we wanted to touch base here on with the Line 3 project. The other thing that's interesting and kind of disappointing is that the Line 3 debate is going to get replayed again in Wisconsin and in Michigan with Enbridge's Line 5. Enbridge's Line 5 transports 22 million gallons of crude oil and natural gas from Superior, Wisconsin through Michigan's Upper Peninsula under the Straits of Mackinac and then ending in the refineries in Ontario. Line 5 was built in 1953, and the governor of Michigan has actually told Enbridge that they need to get the pipeline out of the Straits of Mackinac, and they are refusing. Line 5 also crosses the Bad River Reservation in northern Wisconsin, and its easement expired in 2013. However, Enbridge has not shut down the pipeline. The Bad River Band has recently passed a resolution denying the easement renewal and told Enbridge to remove its pipeline, and Enbridge has refused to comply, and the issue is now in court. What's really frustrating about this is that Canada has evoked treaty law to try to support Enbridge's pipeline in the fight in Wisconsin and Michigan, stating that the United States made a treaty with Canada that they would not interfere on one another's oil production and transfer. So that's just super frustrating. In other national news, we want to congratulate Autumn Peltier, who's the Anishinaabeg Nation's Water Chief Commissioner and the winner of the 2021 Revolution Her Community Vision Award. She won a prize package valued at about $5,000 to help amplify her cause and support for access. She's a water protector from Canada. And in sad news, it looks like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has declared that there will be more than 20 species, including 11 species of bird that will become extinct. One of those is the ivory-billed woodpecker has already gone extinct, and that's just what's happening in the U.S. So there's a lot of negative things happening with the environment that are affecting our relatives, our animal and plant relatives, as we know, because Wendy talks to us about that all the time. And then I just want to touch base, too, in California. Crystal Wapepa, or Wapepa, I'm not sure how to say it. I'm sorry, Crystal, if you're able to tune in from California, has been running an indigenous-based catering business, Wapepa's Kitchen, and she has officially decided to turn it into a proper restaurant, which is really going to be exciting. And that's in the Oakland area of California. So Oakland is getting an indigenous restaurant. And that's just, I'm just so excited for that. Indigenous food all over the country, Robert. Everybody knows that indigenous tribes are all different. If you didn't know, now you know. And our food is all different. So that's going to be really exciting to have different indigenous restaurants throughout the nation.
That's absolutely right. I haven't tried any of them locally. I know Robert's been kind of a foodie, kind of trying all these indigenous businesses, but it's so heartening and so good to hear so many of our relatives get involved in the food business, guys.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. You know, and the back to what you're saying earlier, Ogama, too, about the endangered species, like you said, Wendy talks about that all the time, and it's just, it's heart-wrenching. Being a person, a child of the 60s and a teenager of the 70s, we've been talking about this for so long, and it's still happening. You know, when are we going to get this straight? I don't want to be Debbie Downer, but when are we going to get this straight? Hopefully soon. I just can't handle it sometimes, and today's kind of one of those days, you know. But thank you so much for the news, Ogama, and really excited for the rest of the show here. I think we've been hitting it out of the park for the last, since Lewis joined us, there we go. Not a golf, he's got a golf swing, but I meant baseball, because baseball been very, very good to me. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and up next, Robert Lilligren. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why Native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice. Get involved at mn350.org.
Hey, thank you so much, Ogama. Hey, I'm here with Robert Lilligren, Director of Native American Community Development Institute, NATCI, here in Minneapolis. And we talk about some local stuff, what's happening, and national stuff. And like I say, Robert's always pretty plugged in what's happening, and I learn a lot when Robert comes on. So great to see you, Robert. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Yeah, bonjour, Robert, and hey, Louis and Ogama, nice to see you. Thanks for having me.
So, yeah, I saw you a little earlier today. That was awesome, pleasant surprise.
Yeah, down at the Four Sisters Farmers Market.
Yeah, definitely nice had to see you there. Yeah, definitely, and it's always happening down there. I'd love to give them a plug and try and get there as much as possible because, you know, there's some great vegetables and fruits and things like that. And it's just one of those things where I feel like it's kind of, hey, there's Mike Gozzi. Hey, there's Robert Lilligren. You know, just and then be able to check in and see how everyone's doing.
It is kind of a happening spot. Of course, last year was a little weird because of COVID and everything. But the year before, our market manager at the time was doing this social media thing. I don't know if you ever saw this or if you ever made the cut, Robert. She would do fashion at Four Sisters. Did you see this? She would take photos of some of the folks that were attending the Four Sisters Farmers Market and post them on social media. Yeah. And it was like, dang, we're a pretty fashionable community.
I think that day I had my man purse with me. I think that
you're right.
With a little Ho-Chunk button on there from the Hennepin County Library.
They call that a very satchel, cool. Robert, like Indiana Jones, right?
It's a merce. Yeah. But hey, so Robert, what's been happening? It seems like, I don't know, I haven't talked to you in a long time. I know we were kind of crossing paths today and you were busy and I was talking to Ho-Chunk constituents. So that was kind of interesting, running into some of my Ho-Chunk people and telling them what's going on. So that was fun. But what's been going on? We have some new things happening at the All My Relations Art Gallery, I saw.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of quiet there, right? We just are getting ready for our next show. which is going to be great. It's our gallery assistant. Her name's Juliana Enright, a Dakota woman. And she'll be having a solo show that we're just going to load in. It's going to open in about a week. So that's a big deal. And interestingly, or at least interesting to me, Juliana had this show booked before she was hired as our gallery assistant. But I'll tell you, Robert, as you know, that gallery has been a training ground for art, Native artists and arts professionals that have gone on to national, international careers, like Deani Whitehawk, for example, who was a former gallery director. But there's just a whole list of Native artists and arts professionals that kind of got a boost or right out of All My Relations Arts Gallery.
Yeah. Hey, so when did that start? Because I think I have posters from 2012 or 13. When did that start?
Yep, that would probably be about right. So the gallery itself has been in existence for 20 years, or actually this is 21 years. Last year at our gallery, we did a retrospective of the 20 years, and you really got that perspective of how many well-known artists either got their start or got our boost from the gallery. So the first 10 years, it was kind of a pop-up gallery. It lived on the American and Indian Cultural Corridor on Franklin in the Ancient Traders Market, where Maria's Rest Cafe is and others. It was there for a few years. And then about 11 years ago, our organization, NACDI, Native American Community Development Institute, took over ownership of the gallery. And we had just purchased our building, and so we were able to build out the gallery. And you've been there, Bob. I think all of y'all have been there. And it's just a tiny little gallery, but it has really grown in its sort of influence and its profile. It is really a leading contemporary Native arts gallery here in Minneapolis and in the Midwest, really.
Yeah, it really is. And I think I was at that celebration, too. I can't remember where it was, but I think I was there, too. And it was like all the old directors were there. And it was like, you know, it was really history right there. And
It was. And folks may know, local folks, Shirley Stone was one of the leading personalities that got the gallery established and then kept it going, right? Sustained it. So we owe a lot to those elders that did that work.
Yeah. So what do you got cooking now? What are you working on? And maybe the second segment, we talk a little national stuff.
Yeah, cool. Well, I mean, to kind of continue with the gallery thing. Yeah. So our current gallery director is Angela Two Stars, another Dakota woman, an artist who has become one of the premier public artists in our city and in our region. And something huge that's going on this week. Friday night, there's a little reception, and Saturday, her piece at the Walker Art Center Minneapolis Sculpture Garden opens. And she has done a piece based on water and on Dakota language. And it's really a cool piece. It's super significant. It's somewhat in response to the Walker Art Center Sculpture Garden sculpture, the scaffold that they mounted a few years back that was so offensive. And so this has been the Walker trying to do better, right? And engaging the community, really, really learning how to engage with Native artists and Native community. There's been a lot of ceremony involved and everything. But that opens this Saturday at the Minneapolis Sculpture Garden at the Walker Art Center. The piece is titled in Dakota, it's Help Each Other. But it's this beautiful, moving piece, multimedia, based on water, Dakota language, really something we're seeing. And Angela Two Stars, right from our community here and right out of our gallery, is going to become internationally famous.
Yeah.
Once this opens, we have New York Times and European media all very interested in this because they were all aware of the hideous scaffold sculpture when that went up.
Yeah. Maybe you can mention to our fans in Chicago and Madison a little background on that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, not at all. So we have Minneapolis Sculpture Garden. It's next to the Walker Art Center here, one of our premier non-Native art institutions, famous white art institutions. And the Sculpture Garden is really a premier destination here in Minneapolis. And a few years back, they commissioned a European artist to do a piece that they called Scaffold, that was based on a number of sort of high profile executions and scaffold. But really what it undeniably resembled and was based on was a scaffold that was used to hang 38 Dakota prisoners of war after the 1862 war. And as soon as this was built, the local Native community recognized what it was. People were just really triggered, really traumatized, but there was a huge uproar. Every sector of the local Native community objected. And one of the things, Robert, I'll tell you that was really kind of historic is that whether it was the radical activists who wanted to burn it down or the artist activists or the community activists or people that are more sort of boardroom people like myself, we all had one common message, which was bring it down, bring it down. It was so offensive. And it took the Walker Art Center 3 days to decide to bring it down. It took a little longer to get it down, but it just was really evidence of how strong an impact we can have when we all speak with one voice, bring it down.
And that, for people that are outstate, that's where that famous spoon and the cherry is, that it's kind of iconic to art in the Twin Cities. So it's a big deal, and there's people that go there every day. Hundreds and hundreds of people just visit that place. So that was more than disturbing.
Very disturbing.
I mean, but yeah, that's a little background on that for people that aren't from the cities. But you know, I love going on Franklin Avenue, and I know that's your jam, and I run into you almost every time I stop by there. Maybe you can explain here in a minute, and then we'll get to the next segment, just a little bit of the history. I know American Indian Movement had an office on there for years, and then also it was so many bars and Indian bars and Indians thrown in trunks of police cars. There's some history to that that's not a positive history, but it sure is now.
Yeah, and so there's the bad stuff, right? Like the cops throwing Native guys in the trunks of the car to transport them and stuff. And there's the history of the bars on Franklin Avenue and everything, which isn't always that great, but it really created a center for the community, right? And that East Franklin Avenue, for folks who aren't from Minneapolis, is really sort of the main drag of the Native community here. And it's really unique for American cities to have such a recognizable geography. Everyone in Minneapolis knows East Franklin Avenue is the American Indian Cultural Corridor. That's the center for the American Indian community. And so it's great. It's a huge asset here. I mean, there's some history that's negative, some history that's positive, but it is our place, right? And the community here really embraces that, really defends that, really owns East Franklin Avenue and the American Indian Cultural Corridor as ours, our land.
Yep, definitely. I mean, that's so well put, and I know you could do that. We're going to take a quick break in here with Robert Lilligren, and maybe you can pop that up, Ogama. I got 20 seconds here before we go on, and you can, if you have that overlay. Yeah, there's the scaffolding right there.
Oh, it is. It just gives me the chills even now to
I know.
See it.
Ick.
It makes me sick to my stomach.
But we'll be right.
For those
we'll
who know what the scaffold looks like from 1862, that's exactly what it looked like.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a 5-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Seward Co-op is now offering convenient self-serve and prepackaged hot options and salad bars at both the Franklin and Friendship stores. Breakfast items available daily until 11 a.m. and brunch served all day every Sunday. Their weekly lunch and dinner menus highlight cuisines from around the world. They offer vegan, vegetarian, and gluten-free options daily. 95% of the ingredients used are organic from small-scale, local community food producers whenever possible. More at seward.coop.
Hi, everybody. I'm Santita Jackson, and I want you and all your friends to join my new show, The Santita Jackson Show, Monday through Friday, 6 to 8 a.m. Central, on the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions,
when we relearn our values,
when we live our teachings,
respecting our elders,
cherishing and honoring our children,
when we honor and take care of our spirit,
there will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hi, my name is Frank Brown, owner of Minuteman Press Uptown, and I'd like to tell you why you should choose us for all your printing needs. While it's true Minuteman Press Uptown provides the highest quality printing services and graphic design, there's another important reason why you should choose us. We share your values. We believe our employees are a vital part of our success. At Minuteman Press Uptown, I set out to create jobs with a living wage and benefits. I believe in second chances for people who've made mistakes in the past. We're a proud union shop and would love to earn your business.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950. Frank and his team at Minuteman Press Uptown are AM950's go-to for all printing and promotional needs. I was blown away by the knowledge and passion Minuteman Press Uptown had to help me grow my business. Even if you're not sure where to start, their graphic design team can create an effective campaign and strategy to increase your visibility. So choose a print shop who shares your values. They work with businesses, nonprofits, and political campaigns. Call 612-870-0777 or visit mpuptown.com.
Ryan here with locally owned Snap Construction. Hey, too much snapping. I have an important message. Roofing, siding, insulation, and window material rates have come down considerably. Production is up. Best of all, there's still time to lock in one of the many great city, state, and federal home fix-up loans with rates as low as 0%. Some cities are even offering no repayment until you sell or refi. We don't expect these programs to last much longer. Snap to it and set up your no-obligation inspection quote for your roofing, siding, windows, or insulation job today. Your Snap Construction remodel expert can lay out all the options for your roofing, siding, window, insulation project, along with all rebates, incentives, and federal, state, and city financing programs that you qualify for. Call Snap Construction today, home of the Lifetime Craftsmanship Warranty. For over the last decade, we are arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, window, insulation contract in the Twin Cities. Don't take our word for it. Google us. SnapConstruction.com, 612-333-SNAP.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Slight chance of rain showers overnight with a low of 61, then clouds will give way to sunshine on Friday with a high of 77. Getting your estate planning done with Stroman Law can be easy and cost-effective. Get started today at stromanlaw.com, stromenlaw.com.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Say, I also want to give a quick shout out to Lewis. Lewis, maybe you can talk a little bit just to give us a quick blur, but Lewis does all the graphics. If you're watching us on Facebook and YouTube, it's just amazing. And I know he's an IT specialist and he's got his own business. Do you want just to give a quick shout out before we get to Robert?
Yeah, how am I talking up? It's good to be out here doing the good work with our community. I really love it. I'm on TikTok at That Lakota Guy. Don't listen to the haters. I'm still there, you know, that type of thing.
But also, I want you to talk about your IT business, too.
Oh, yeah. So I do a lot of IT work. If anyone out there is interested in an IT consultant, break fix stuff, that type of thing. Salesforce administration, as well as anything else, definitely hit us up here on Native Roots Radio.
Yeah, and we'll get Lewis on it because he's been a great addition for Ogama, I, and Wendy, and we're just happy to have him, and we want to keep him happy. So everyone, give us a call, and maybe you can work on your IT stuff. Hey, back with Robert Lilligren here. Robert Lilligren again. I have your, it's funny, I have your what is it called? Your whole information here from Wikipedia. But you're the director of Native American Community Development Institute, NADCI, and welcome back. And, you know, I just love having you on here, and we kind of just rap and talk about things, and we're roughly the same age, and it's kind of fun to reminisce in a good way, but also talk about the future and all the people that that we see that are coming around that are real true warriors and that we've been waiting for a while, and the young people, and they're really coming up. But I really just like to, what would you like to talk about? I mean,
yeah, thanks, Robert. I mean, a lot of what's going on right now is we're all getting ready for Indigenous Peoples Day next week, right? And so that's Monday. Folks might know that Minneapolis was the first city in the state to declare Indigenous Peoples Day back in 2014. Our organization, NACDI, was a lead organizer in seeing that happen, but the community really came together and pushed for it. And then came St. Paul and other cities, and now it's statewide, right? Governor Dayton in 2016 declared Indigenous people statewide. So you talk about the young people coming up and stuff. I mean, just looking at all of the activities that are being planned for next Monday and throughout the week, you know, so we'll have our sunrise ceremony right here in Minneapolis at Bede Mikaska. If folks want to head over to the east, or I'm sorry, rather the west side of the lake at Bede Mikaska, sunrise is about 7:20. So you want to get there by 7 o'clock or so. That's going on. The Walk on Teepee Project is having a blessing of Mother Earth on Indigenous Peoples Day. That's 4 to 6 p.m. in the Lower Phelan Creek area at the Bruce Vento Wildlife Reserve. That's going on. The Franklin Avenue Library is going to have a reading in the afternoon with Diane Wilson, Dakota author, on about her seed stories. Yeah. So there's so much going on.
Yeah. I know Ogama is going to be in D.C. on Monday. So we're excited to get a report from her.
And what are you doing there, Ogama?
I was just going to say, I actually forgot to mention it in my news today. The People versus Fossil Fuels rally is kicking off in Washington, D.C. on Monday on Indigenous Peoples Day with an Indigenous-led a protest at Washington, D.C. And then actually actions are going to happen every weekday next week. So we'll be following that pretty closely, but definitely excited to be boots on the ground there for Indigenous Peoples Day at the Capitol. I've never been before, so what no better reason to go, in my opinion.
Agree. Thanks for representing. That sounds really powerful.
Yeah, I'll be there.
We're going to make her a shirt with Baby on Board in the back.
Yeah, so she doesn't get
arrested. They were joking about that yesterday. So instead of it reading press, it's going to read Baby on Board, so that hopefully it'll deter them from arresting me or something.
Right. And then, Robert, you and I are going to be part of next week. I think it's on the 13th, forum with the Lieutenant Governor, our white sister, Peggy Flanagan, and having sort of a community meet and greet with the Lieutenant Governor as part of the whole Indigenous Peoples Day sort of week celebration. So so lots happening.
Yeah, we're excited. And, you know, I've learned as an old person now that I can't burn bridges with a flamethrower anymore like I did in my 20s. So, you know, we have to really extend a hand and really celebrate things that are going well in our community and with our politicians.
Yeah, agree. And, you know, we may not always agree with the people that are in elected office, but we still need to make sure that we're supporting them and that you know, that they know we have their backs, right? And
right.
You know, it's funny to hear you talk about being a flamethrower. And I remember back in the day, you know, during my activist days, I could be quite the flamethrower, rock thrower, and whatever. And then I ended up getting elected, right? I served on Minneapolis City Council for 12 years. And it was so funny because there'd be, especially like these corporate, you know, kind of representatives, corporate presidents and vice presidents that I'd be sitting across from the table as their city council member now. Where for years I've been sitting across the table of the, you know, from them, sort of throwing rocks at them and stuff. And so they would sit there and, you know, I'm trying to define our new relationship and, you know, our evolving roles. And they would sit there literally like they thought I was going to jump across the table and like bite him in the necks or something. I mean, they would, every time I'd open my mouth, they'd kind of flinch backward. And every time I'd maybe raise my voice a little, they'd get all braced, like they were ready for an attack. And it's like, hey, you know, everyone has a role to play. Our roles are always changing. Let's figure out our new roles. I'm not that two-dimensional, right?
Right. So, well, I remember too, in our younger years, we never trusted anyone over 30.
Right.
And, and now I'm like two times 30 and I'm going, oh, please trust me. Please trust me.
Right. Lewis and Ogama are too young to remember that. But back in the 60s, they used to say that, never trust anyone over 30. Then, of course, that whole hippie generation became 30. Then it was never trust anyone over 40.
Yeah. Well, the new 60 is or the new 50, 60 or whatever. So don't trust any over that looks 50, but that's 60 because they did a deal with the devil. Go ahead, Ogama.
I just don't trust anybody in Congress. That's pretty much where I'm at. Any of the 60 to 70 year old white males in Congress is who I don't trust. But as far as indigenous people go, I try to respect my elders, with the exception of Bernie.
Ogama, I do trust the 60 and 70 year olds. It's the 70 and 80 year olds I don't trust.
maybe that's it. Yeah, there we go.
Well, I'm a Gen Xer. We get along with everybody. So.
Oh, yeah, right. But, you know, Robert and I have had this conversation many, many times off air when we were prepping our two-hour show that we used to have, and because it was taped, and we're just how things have changed so much and what we've seen positive in our lifetime. I mean, there's so many things from us being able to do our own religion. When you tell people, hey, yeah, we couldn't do our own religion until 1978, they're like, what do you mean? And even our parents saw people that, or they were people that couldn't vote in this country at one time. I mean, we can go on and on with the erasure, lack of rights that we had, Robert.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's so different now, you know, and we've talked about this before, but I graduated from high school in 1978. So when the American Indian Freedom of Religion Act passed, you know, and all of a sudden I grew up in the northern suburbs out in Blaine High School is where I went to school. And you know, suddenly we had Native students coming together for recognition and things that had never happened before. And I remember we had a luncheon in my high school for the, I think, 12 of us that were enrolled tribal members that were graduating this year. And we had gone to school together for like 12 years and we had never self-identified as Native. So we were like, oh, you're Indian? Oh, wow, you're Indian? And some of the people, there was no denying that they were Indian. You could tell by looking at them.
Right.
For 12 years together, we'd never self-identified because there was no advantage to doing that. You know, there was risk to identifying as Native. And so, you just kind of look, that was 1978. Look where we are now, where we celebrate our students and their cultures.
You know, that's mind-blowing, too. I have the same story, Robert, where I went to junior high with this family, and it's a pretty big family. And then years later, I find out they're Ho-Chunk. Not only are they Indian, they're Ho-Chunk. And I was like, well, I thought you were a Mexican or Italian or something. Yeah.
Right.
It's crazy. But yeah, we've gone through a lot and seen a lot in our lifetime. And that's what gives us a lot of hope, because we see people like our young people, like my former students and students that are learning the language. And, you know, we never had that opportunity in high school or around then.
Right. Or even you look at folks like Ogama and Lewis right here, you know, people that have grown up really knowing who they are as Native people. You know, having exposure to culture and language that we never had, never, you know. So it gives me hope.
We always build a bridge to that next generation, Robert, you know. I always think about, if you guys ever think about those Quechua or Southern Indigenous people, they build these bridges from one top of the mountain to the other. It's quite amazing in the Andes Mountains. And I always equate that to kind of how we're doing with our next generation, is building those little bridges that connect one mountain to the other, making it making something impassable passable with what we're doing.
I love it.
And That is really well put. I just want to say this last thing, too. I know, you know, I'm 60, so people that were 65, 64, 66, I know that they've told me things like, I wasn't proud to be an Indian until American Indian Movement got radical. And that's when they stepped up, and it was the beginning. I know there's a lot of controversy in that statement, but that's the God's honest truth. And I felt like I needed to go to Standing Rock, Robert, in order to have my own wounded knee and things like that, because I was at the in-between age. But I just want to say, hey, Pini Gigi, for being on as always. Thank you so much, Robert.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and up next with Lewis. Lewis has a guest, and we'll be back after this short break. Again, Pini Gigi, Robert Lilligren.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hey, Cudigy to all my friends and relatives in four directions. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. I'm here to ask you for your support. Finding honest, Native-centered news is not easy. But with your support, we're able to provide accurate information about Standing Rock, Line 3, treaty violations, and COVID-19 in our Native communities. Please visit Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon and donate if you can. That's Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Pini Gigi, and thank you for your support.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, you're not alone. Strong Hearts Native Helpline can help you through these difficult and uncertain times. Strong Hearts Helpline is a free 24/7 confidential domestic dating and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the chat now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
So, hey, I want to quickly hand over the show to Lewis Eagle Thunder. Lewis, take it away.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Whoopi Watonka, Robert, Ogma, and of course, Wendy, not here today. Native Roots Radio, man, very powerful medium in the FM sphere, AM sphere, Madison, Chicago, and of course, AM 950. We really appreciate it. Today, I have a guest here that's kind of on the front lines of art when we think about Indigenous education. She works as a secondary educator, teacher at the Dakota Prep Institute, which is part of the American Indian OIC. It is a accredited alternative high school for students ages 14 through 21. The school is under contract with the Minneapolis Public School District, MSP District 1, focuses on helping all students advancement in core academics. How honka shi, ampetu ptanyetu washte. Good to see you so much, relative. How are you doing?
Ha, thank you. Jenimachiapi, I suppose I should just hop into my introduction. Jenimachiapi na sichangu lakota himacha. I said my name is Jen, and I am Sichangu Lakota. I am a teacher at Dakota Prep, like you said. It was a perfect segue into our topics, talking about Native youth and about AIM, actually. Our school was actually started by AIM. It's okay, bud. Sorry, my son. You're okay, bud.
He likes AIM.
I'm sorry, what?
He sounds like he likes American Indian Movement.
Oh, he ran over right when I started talking. So yeah, we were started by AIM and OIC. So OIC actually stands for Opportunities and Industrialization Center. And so a lot of what the AIOIC does is provide education and additional opportunities for training. Like currently we have IT training and like warehouse training, but we also have our high school, and the high school is what is connected to the Minneapolis Public School District. We teach like quite a bit of culture within the average subjects. So I teach science and art. I'm also licensed in English education, but we are learning about force and acceleration and work, some physics topics, and I'm actually having students use teepee poles and make a travoy and try to like pull it and time themselves, and I think it's going to be really fun. But we really try to layer everything with culture, kind of what you were saying previously. You know, it's been so long that it's been basically almost for a while it was illegal to, you know, be Native, but including in like the education sector, it's been basically just ignored. All Native topics, you know, we've got like a little section of, you know, during Thanksgiving time, everyone talks about Natives like briefly, and then it's not even the truth, and everyone moves on, and then we're never spoken about again. And like you said, a lot of students don't identify themselves as Native, but our school attracts almost 99% Native students. That feel like they maybe weren't so successful at larger schools, and we give them the opportunity to kind of, I like to say, kind of like wrap them in the culture, because they don't have to walk into school and not be who they are, and not be acknowledged. We smudge. Yeah. We smudge, and we actually recently found an eagle that might be nesting nearby, so we think that's really amazing. Our Ojibwe teacher, Kevin Smoky Day, brought out all the students, and they put down tobacco and said their thanks, kind of honoring the Wombly. So
that's great. When I think about, you know, my journey in education, Jennifer, it's crazy because I was one of the first ones to go through American Indian education. What does it call it? Middle Magnet School, which was the old Harding Building in East St. Paul. And that was the first time to have, like, you know, Indigenous American Indian, you know, immersion in, you know, in our education. So that was really interesting. But I hear what you say about alternative schools, because traditional high school really didn't work for me. And I found the Pease Academy, which still exists today. But that immersion is so important when it comes to cultural connection, because statistically, we have the lowest graduation rate among anyone in our communities, very low. And we think about secondary education and statistics about being successful or being self-sufficient, those statistics even go down. And it's important to reach out to our communities, our Indigenous communities, especially the American Indian Cultural Corridor, where Robert Lilligren actually enacted these, actually. You guys aren't too far away from that area as well. So we're talking about Little Earth community, that whole South Minneapolis Indigenous community, and, you know, kind of serving them in that community. You know, as an American Indian yourself, how important was it for you to get involved as a teacher and, you know, kind of work with students that you kind of known that complex family history and things like generational trauma, family trauma that are very unique to our community?
Exactly. Exactly. So we are right next to Little Earth and the cultural corridor, like you guys were talking about earlier. A lot of our students come from that area, but they also come from South and North and St. Paul and nearby suburbs and all over to come specifically for that kind of cultural immersion. We also have a high school right across the street that's also an alternative school. So that's kind of an interesting setup there. But students, you know, they get to be within that, you know, neighborhood, within that school, within the culture, you know. So it's a wonderful kind of layering that I think really increases student success, especially American Indian students. So we actually had three times the number of graduates last year than we did the previous year. They worked so hard during the pandemic just to, like, you know, finally graduate or graduate on time, things that they can really be proud of. So I just wanted to, you know, shout out to them.
We got a couple minutes left, but I just wanted to, you know, emphasize that, you know, from the beginning of the Dakota Prep to where it is today, can you talk about the success that you're having, not only with the students, but graduation rates? You know, last year, you were actually on the news, if I'm not mistaken, giving out Eagle Feathers at graduation. And we talk about, you know, bringing up our people from the ground up and working with our people to get to that graduation rate. You're on there and you're actually doing it. So maybe you could talk a little bit about the success of your graduation rate with Dakota.
Yeah. So actually, when I was first hired there, this was, I think, I want to say 3 years ago. I basically was hired at a time when I think it was 11 of the Native students from Minneapolis graduated from Dakota Prep, and there was only like 15 Native students total that graduated that year, something like that. I might be getting those numbers wrong. So, but it was an incredible amount of the Native students who graduated came from our school. Because we've got a lot of those classes and services next door in the AIOIC part of the building, a lot of students are able to utilize those after graduation for additional trainings if they want. We also have like adult education and GED class.
Thank you so much. We'll be back tomorrow.